Today is March 7, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio here in Washington. Coming up, an emergency meeting called by the U.S. and Japan of the U.N. Security Council, a new presidential order halting visas from such countries, but rights groups and members of Congress promise fast action to block the new travel ban.
It's barely a fresh coat of paint on the same car that doesn't drive.
Also ahead, we're going to open up the vault. What are we talking about? Stay tuned to find out. You don't want to miss the vault. It's all on today's International Edition. Japan and the U.S. have called an emergency meeting Wednesday of the U.N. Security Council resolution. The U.S. Pacific Command said that the first elements of the Advanced Anti-Missile Defense System, THAAD, are being deployed, with the system scheduled to be operational next month. China, though, opposes its deployment and has closed several retail stores of South Korea's Lotte Group, which provided the land for the anti-missile system. VOA's Victor Beatty talks with James Kim with the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies.
There are reports of retaliatory measures being taken against the company in China by both the Chinese authorities as well as the consumers. Any kind of reassurance about the importance of the alliance is a good thing for the Korean government and the Korean companies as they move forward with that deployment.
Is this going to be a real problem in Chinese-South Korean relations that could affect South Korean business?
I think overall it is a negative development, not only for South Korea, but also for the Chinese economy, given that a lot of South Korean investments are responsible for jobs within China. But overall, the relative percentages and the relative dependence is heavier on the Korean side for the Chinese economy rather than the other way around. And this is a problem that the South Korean government and the businesses would have had to have addressed sooner or later, especially given the slowdown in the Chinese economy. I think it's best that this problem be addressed earlier rather than later.
But the North Korean threat outweighs the concerns with business relations with Beijing.
You know, if you put two factors together, number one, the trade reliance that South Korea has with China, along with the growing North Korean security threat, would have put South Korea in a deeper hole if South Korea did not address this issue as soon as it could.
The Chinese state-run Global Times warning the possibility of war on the Korean Peninsula is growing and denounced the U.S., South Korea, and Pyongyang for stoking tensions while warning Seoul it will not allow the North Korean regime to fall and the peninsula to be unified. Okay, we turn now to big news coming out today by WikiLeaks, and let's go ahead and read some of the headlines by some of the news sources online, and then we will turn to Doug Bernard, and we go to Doug here. Now listen, WikiLeaks releases entire hacking capacity of the CIA, Fox News. WikiLeaks publishes a CIA trove alleging wide-scale hacking, ABC News. And WikiLeaks releasing a trove of alleged CIA hacking documents, the New York Times, coming out 9 minutes ago. What's going on?
Doesn't sound good for the CIA, does it?
It does not.
No, and likely this is causing a great deal of headaches. So basically WikiLeaks, the pro-freedom, pro-transparency organization that used to be headed by Julian Assange, has released what they call is the first part of what are several parts of a stash of CIA tactics, tools, and techniques used for electronic surveillance. Some of these have been rumored about for years. Some of them are brand new. The CIA, first off, we need to say, is not commenting. CIA has been asked for comment on the validity of these documents. So far, about 7,800 pages have been released. WikiLeaks says more are on the way. The CIA is declining to comment. They say simply, we do not discuss purported intelligence techniques or tactics. But I've been going through some of these documents. Essentially, what they allege, I mean, there's going to be many stories that come from this, Phil, but I think one of the stories is that it would appear that the CIA, working with the NSA, has developed techniques to break encryption, encryption used in popular applications like WhatsApp or Telegram or Signal or all of these kind of messaging services that people use because they believe that they are encrypted end to end, so nobody can actually read them. Well, if these documents are real, and if they are to be believed, it would appear that the CIA can read them and can access them.
Okay, so, but WikiLeaks, they seem to do what they say they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They have a good reputation. Is that fair to say as far as that they can hack and get the information out?
Well, clearly this information was leaked to them. We don't know by whom. I'm sure many people are asking that right now. WikiLeaks has a good reputation in as far as this goes. It would, if you look back over their some 8-year long history, almost all of the documents, or I should say it this way, almost none of the documents that they've released, and they've released millions and millions of pages of documents from all various governments and all sources, have ever really been contested. So WikiLeaks has a good track record in terms of the information that they release does appear to be, generally speaking, valid information.
Okay, so and if you look at what's coming out now, it just seems that the information, you know, certainly during the campaign and what was going on with Hillary Clinton and all this stuff coming out and who's hacking who,
right?
It just seems like hacking is like the easiest thing in the world, and nothing, not even the nation's security for any country, can be safe. Well, and the information.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
stunning.
It is stunning. And this is a kind of warfare that a lot of intelligence analysts refer to as sort of non-linear warfare. That means the threats that they possess of possible hacking, releasing of documents, that kind of thing, is very different than the traditional kinetic threats that a government has. Big bombs, aircraft carriers, you know, things that go boom, essentially. Those cost lots of money. Governments, you know, these are very sophisticated weaponry. Hacking at this point is, you know, you do have to have some sophistication, but almost anybody can do it. I mean, we've seen even the North Koreans, have become somewhat skilled, moderately skilled in terms of hacking. So, you know, you bring up an interesting point. I mean, is this going to even further muddy the waters in terms of people's minds and questioning about whether there was, obviously there was hacking, but whether the Russians were behind the hacking? Tools and techniques that was released in this document dump, Vault 7, as WikiLeaks is calling it, is apparently the CIA got a hold of Russian hacking tools that they use to then make it look like the Russians were responsible for a hack when they really are. So this is a real game of shadows, and I think it's just going to again really call attention in Washington. President Trump made no comments about cybersecurity or building up the cyber defenses in the United States in his address to Congress.
Right.
I thoroughly expect that the White House is going to change their tune on this very quickly.
Yeah, it's always been a big issue, too.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right, VOA's Doug Bernard. You'll keep an eye on that and keep filling us in as this goes along. You can follow him on voanews.com and everywhere else. This is International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. deploying the first elements of its missile defense system to South Korea. Malaysia barring all North Koreans from leaving the country, while North Korea does the same in turn. Will the new travel ban pass muster? And Iraq's military recapturing control of the main government buildings in western Mosul. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. A new U.S. executive order temporarily halting the issuance of new visas for travelers from six countries is to go into effect March 16th. Now, that will replace an earlier controversial order in which visitors from the same countries and a seventh one, Iraq, were barred from entry to the U.S. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reports.
And she is...
President Trump on Monday did a do-over, revising an earlier order and barring new visas for applicants from Iran, Libya, Sudan, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen, all Muslim-majority nations. White House spokesman Sean Spicer tweeted a photo of what he said was the signing in the Oval Office. Reporters and press photographers were not allowed to witness it. Three members of the president's cabinet later appeared before the media, calling the revised order essential for national security.
To our allies and partners around the world, please understand this order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends.
Nothing in this executive order affects existing lawful permanent residents or persons with current authorization to enter our homeland. Unregulated, unvetted travel is not a universal privilege, especially when national security is at stake.
The order also halts for 120 days resettlement in the United States of any new refugees. The revised travel ban came under immediate criticism from some Democratic members of Congress and rights groups. They term it racist and missing the mark, noting a Homeland Security report concluding citizenship is not a factor in terrorist threats. Amnesty International says it will stir hatred and division. The American Civil Liberties Union tweeted, "The new Muslim ban is still a Muslim ban."
The previous controversial directive issued in January had remained blocked while a court in Washington state determined whether it passed constitutional tests. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
All right, you're listening to International Edition. I'm Philip Alexiou. Stick around, we've got more to come.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
It turns out that pop star George Michael died from natural causes, this according to a British coroner. George had a heart condition known as dilated cardiomyopathy and a bad liver. His body had some trouble pumping blood, which caused inflammation of the heart muscle. So, since he died of natural causes, there will be no investigation, but George did have a history of drug and alcohol abuse, and that certainly couldn't help things. Remember those hit songs like Wham! And Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, and Careless Whisper, and Father Figure in Freedom as his career advanced. He had a close call back in 2011 with pneumonia, but got back on his feet until Christmas at the age of 53. But his music lives on forever. You go-go, George Michael. This is VOA's International Edition. Well, Ed Sheeran, one of the biggest pop stars today, has a new album out with two songs already pretty high on the charts. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald tells VOA's Jim Stevenson what Ed Sheeran's been doing after taking a year off, mostly from social media.
One of the great rags-to-riches stories of modern music. Ed was homeless. He was a vagabond for a while he was coming up. He'd sleep on friends' couches, slept outside a few times, and now he's one of the biggest music stars on earth.
Isn't that where you would get your best material from, though?
Oh, yeah. And he said that. He says, life has given me a lot of great material. His new album's called Divide. It comes 2 years and 9 months after his second set, Multiply, which Spotify named as the most streamed album in the world in 2014. So anticipation was high for this. Now, in December of 2015, Ed announced a hiatus from social media. He says, I'm turning all of this off. I'm going underground. Exactly 1 year later, he was back on social media with the cover design for the Divide album. It features songwriting collaborations with Ryan Tedder, who's the leader of the band One Republic, and a hit songwriter in his own right. Ed also collaborated with British singer Jesse Ware, and he co-produced his hit single Castle on the Hill with Benny Blanco, who's worked with Justin Bieber, Maroon 5, Katy Perry, a bunch of other huge stars. But this is not an album filled with guest stars. This is truly an Ed Sheeran album. He released two singles at the same time prior to the album, Castle on the Hill and Shape of You. They both immediately went to the top two slots on the UK singles chart, first time that ever happened in British chart history. Shape of You also debuted at number one here in America on the Hot 100, and it's there right now. It's logged five total weeks at the top. And last year, Ed also hit number one with the song Love Yourself, which he wrote and gave to Justin Bieber. He said it just wouldn't fit on Divide. So he let Justin sing it, and it was a number one hit. That's not all Ed Sheeran gave Justin Bieber. He also gave him a shot to the head with a golf club. And like many of Ed Sheeran's stories, it starts out with, we got drunk one night, mm-hmm. because Ed is a bit of a party animal. Now, apparently, he and Justin went to a bar, and then they ended up at a golf course. And Justin Bieber put a golf ball in his mouth and said, Ed, hit the golf ball out of my mouth.
Oh.
Well, as you can imagine, it didn't go quite as planned. Ed had a couple of other adventures in 2016. He got cut on his cheek by a sword wielded by a member of the British royal family. They were horsing around, and she wanted to knight him. And then Ed also required ear surgery after he jumped off a yacht and burst his eardrum.
The price of stardom.
The price of stardom. This is a guy, he just turned 26. He wants to live life to the fullest, and he has every opportunity to.
We look forward to catching one of his shows and one of his songs on the Top 20 Countdown, hosted by our own Ray McDonald.
There's a lot of Ed Sheeran in the countdown right now.
And you can also catch Ray on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Come on, baby. I'm in love with your body. Come on, baby.
Okay, Ed Sheeran, way to go on that. All right, on to other news. In cities across the United States, local communities are hosting dinners for refugees. Now, it's part of an initiative called Refugees Welcome. The goal is to break barriers by breaking bread together. VOA's Elizabeth Lee attending a dinner in Los Angeles where Syrian refugees shared their experience of settling in the U.S.
There is a melting pot of foods from different cultures, representing the face of America. The host of this dinner is an organization called Tribe that celebrates different cultural and religious traditions within a community. They are preparing for the guests of honor. Among them is Mohammed Nasser Trad, a Syrian refugee who just turned 19. It's his first birthday in America.
It's a big step to come here, and it's a big difference because it's different culture. So I hope to adapt here very quick.
Trad arrived in the U.S. 6 months ago. He feels that he can't completely adapt until he speaks English fluently.
And thank you very much for inviting us here.
Which he is trying hard to learn in college. But he is adapting in other ways.
I try to make some grilled cheese, some quesadilla, some stuff. Yeah, I learned some. So I tried at home.
Trad's sister, Layla, is 15 and having a rough time fitting in at school.
Some of them, they talk to me, like, can I see your hair? Why you put this like this? Yeah. And they're, sometimes they bother me, like, you're a tourist or something like that. But I don't listen to them.
It's hard for her and for me because just taking the news from the TV and they don't know the truth.
Syrian refugees are barred from entering the U.S. for 120 days under a new executive order signed Monday by President Donald Trump.
He judged one people just that Syrian can be a terrorist. Maybe anyone can be. I mean, it's not, you can't judge anyone by just his nationality.
But Throud's critique of President Trump stops there.
It's the will of God, so I'm happy because he chose him.
Throud says so far his experience in the U.S. has been very different than the White House rhetoric.
A lot of Americans welcome us and so nice to us, and they want to help us.
The aim is that these kinds of interactions continue long past the dinners in all the communities where refugees are trying to resettle and hoping to celebrate many more birthdays in the U.S. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
All right, well, good for those guys. Well, listen, crowds gathered in some icy cold temperatures in Fairbanks, Alaska early yesterday to cheer as 71 mushers set off on a nearly 1,600-kilometer trek across the wilderness for the second time in 3 years. The race, beginning in Fairbanks, which is farther north instead of Anchorage because of inadequate snow. Alaska experiencing some record warmth in 2016, logging the warmest May the state has seen in the past 137 years. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Excuse me. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. I'm Philip Alexio. For everybody here at VOA, have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is working with its partner, Rwanda, to help children read. On February 16th, the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, held a launch event at Groupe Scolaire Kinyinya to highlight the U.S. government's early grade reading project, which aims to improve the Kinyarwanda reading skills of 1 million children over the next 4 years. The Early Grade Reading Project is implemented in partnership with the Ministry of Education and the Rwanda Education Board, and it consists of three activities that are valued at over 68 billion Rwandan francs, or about 80 million U.S. dollars. The U.S. government's partnership to support Kinyarwanda literacy is built upon evidence that literacy in the first language that students speak and understand is foundational for their success in school. The Early Grade Reading Project's three complementary activities are the Mureke Dusam Let's Read activity engages parents, communities, and literacy champions to help children embrace a culture of reading outside of school. Mureke Dusam is implemented by Save the Children in collaboration with the Rwandan Education Board. The Soma Umenye Read and Know activity will train teachers and provide extra reading materials to schools. It will also strengthen the capacity of the Rwanda Education Board and advocate for policies that support reading, and the Teacher Mentorship Community of Practice Program, implemented by FHI 360, U.S.-based public health and international development NGO, has developed an online platform for teachers to access teaching materials and forums and to take teaching certification courses online. U.S. Ambassador to Rwanda, Erica Barks Ruggles, highlighted the importance of partnership with the Ministry of Education and civil society. Also on hand for the launch were Rwanda's Minister of State, in charge of primary and secondary education, and the Director General of the Rwanda Education Board. The three worked with parents from Gikumbi District to create homemade reading materials for children. Our partnership with the government of Rwanda, teachers, community leaders, and parents is key to achieving Rwanda's literacy goals as set out in Vision 2020, said Ambassador Barks Ruggles. We are working with all our partners to support children's reading ability so that every child has the opportunity to succeed and help build Rwanda's future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.